Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope, and I'm your host, Rory Hearn. And today is another of our Housing for All analysis panels. I think this could be panel number 5. My brain is starting to go very fuzzy. We're joined by Hewnet Brennan from the Ocoolan Co-Housing Alliance, Lorcan Sir, Senior Lecturer in TUD Dublin, and Bernard Joyce from the Irish Traveller Movement. And as Lorcan quipped there earlier, the amount of podcasts and people we've spoken today is probably more than the consultation that was done for the Housing for All plan, which is probably very true and, again, shows Lorcan's deep sense of humour. But a reminder to our listeners, thank you for those of you who are joining us for your first episode. To those of you long-suffering listeners, thank you. And patrons, thank you to those who are patrons. If you're not a patron, if you're not a supporter, Reboot Republic is an independent media, completely relies on patrons to pay the cost of production. So if you can, become a supporter, go over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack and sign up for whatever you can each month and help us to keep producing these podcasts.
You need to say that a little bit more slowly. Every time you say that, nobody can hear understand what Patreon is, and they don't sign up. So you need to say Q, it one more
time. I'll say it one more time. Q.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/tortoiseshack.
P-A-T-R-E-O-N. R-E-O-N.com. There you are. Now you're going to get people to sign up.
Good man. I'm going to, and if you do sign up, send us an email to say you're signing up because Hugh Brennan got Rory to talk slowly to do it.
Absolutely.
Just to say, I just signed up. Bernard Joyce here. I've just signed up after hearing that.
Thanks. Great. There you go. Look, you'll never get Lorcan to sign up though.
But I might not sign up already. No.
Yeah. Oh, seriously, though, I have to say it's been a long day going through this plan, and I read it last night. Yesterday evening, I read it and did the article for the Examiner and was chatting to Lorcan about it yesterday, and absolutely underwhelmed. I was surprised how fucking disappointed I was actually reading it. I don't know what I got a bit caught up in the hype and was expecting all sorts of things out of it. But it really... It delivered on rhetoric. It delivered on language describing the crisis. But I was really struck, and it was actually in the last podcast, Amy from the CATU Union said it. She said it was Housing for All in the title, but all it talks about is the squeezed middle and no one else really. And of course, who is the squeezed middle, of course, is another definition altogether. But Lorcan, maybe just to give a brief go to you first. What is your analysis of the plan as a housing plan, a strategy to solve the housing crisis?
Yeah, I think it's very similar. It's kind of more of the same. We're rebuilding Ireland for slow learners. It's kind of very similar to the previous plan. It's the fourth plan we've had in 9 years. This one definitely took its cue from the previous one. And it's interesting when you look at how policy is made in Ireland, and I'm not going to be nerdy about this, but as a PhD student looking at housing policy and how it's made, you find that typically in Ireland, policy is made on the back of previous policy. So even if the previous policy is wrong, what they do is they kind of use that previous policy as a stepping stone for the next policy rather than starting afresh. And I thought that this plan would kind of start more afresh. It would be a blank sheet and away we'd go. And Fianna Fáil would leave their imprint on it. Fianna Fáil, traditionally a party of builders, and we know over the years that they've built, well, I've done the analysis from the 1920s on, and together Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have delivered about the same number of social houses over the years, give or take on average, per year of being in power. But Fianna Fáil have delivered a lot more private housing per year of being in power. So you'd think that the plan was going to be very much dominated by Fianna Fáil ideology and their history, custom, traditions and practice of getting out there and building housing. But instead, it was very much, it looked to me like Fine Gael won the arm wrestle in the negotiating room here. And it's very much similar to the Rebuilding Ireland, which was Fine Gael, Simon Coveney's plan. So it's very much about investment. It's very much about subsidies, enticements, inducements to get the private sector to do what the state used to do so well or needs to do for itself. It didn't go near. One of the reasons it's not going to work, and I'm going to lay my cards on the table there with that one, I'm going to bet that it's not going to work, is that they didn't do anything to tackle the large funds. Now, whatever you think about the funds, one of the things they do, so I'm talking about the large institutions that are building build-to-rent and co-living and all those kind of Mac housing solutions, they look good on the menu, but they don't keep you satisfied for very long, is they absorb an awful lot of labor, materials and resources. So if you think about, you need two workers for every house that gets built, right? So the plan is for 33,000 houses on average. That's 66,000 workers. There's 150,000 workers in the country, construction workers, and they're building roads and all that kind of stuff. But they're also building build-to-rent, and they're building co-living and all that kind of stuff. And if you really wanted to kind of, if they were serious about building housing, because I've no clue how they're going to get from zero to where they want to go, 33,000, and particularly the social housing. If they wanted to do that, they would have kind of curtailed or clipped the wings of the investment funds, maybe took them out of residential and let them go into industrial and all that kind of stuff, office like they do in Germany and Spain, and take them out of residential and then bring those workers back to focus on the delivery of residential housing. And really, you know, it's for ordinary people on ordinary wages looking for ordinary housing. It's really difficult to get that to happen because there's so many workers involved in doing something else. So I get the impression that Fine Gael definitely won the arm wrestle in the room. Dara O'Brien, I would have thought it would be something more traditional along the lines of what Fianna Fáil have always been good at. Haven't necessarily always done it in the right way, leading to loads of tribunals and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, they've traditionally been builders, or the party of builders, not the party of big money, not the Fine Gael party of the ranchers in the 30s and the big money now. But it seems that they've kind of gone that way. So I think their plan is going to be really hard to bring to fruition without costing the state and the taxpayer an awful lot of money.
I think as well, Lorcan, there's something that strikes me as well, is that they politically, though, they know this plan isn't going to deliver affordable housing on scale. And therefore, generation rent, the housing for generation is not going to be solved. Do they have a naive belief that the market, these enticements will deliver affordable housing for that so-called squeezed middle? Or do they hope that they will curry enough, double income families who will be able to buy a home? I don't get it. Where is their political calculation?
I think they have bought the line that, and anybody in the construction industry or development industry knows that this doesn't work like this, but they've bought the line that if they build enough houses, prices will come down. And that's really, it's a very naive assumption. It works if you're making golf balls or widgets or hammers or something like that, but it doesn't work in the housing market, because the housing market is controlled by very few players, really, who have, you know, particularly the large players. So what happens in housing is, as soon as builders see, it happens in the UK as well, and we're moving very much towards a UK model of house building where it's dominated by a handful of large companies. And what happens there, it's called the absorption rate. When the house builders see prices begin to flatline, they take their foot off the pedal of supply. In other words, they constrict supply in order to maintain the sales price. And that's very much what happens in the UK. It happens here. It's called the absorption rate. If anybody wants to look at a great book called Housing in Ireland, the A to Z Guide, it'll give you all that in there. And that's what they fall into, this trap of very simplistic economics, and this is spouted by economists all over the place, that, you know, if you build enough houses, prices will come down and therefore everybody will be happy. But it the real world, it doesn't work like that. And I think that's what they're pinning their hopes on, Rory, is that if they can get these 33,000 houses out every year, that prices will fall and be brilliant. But of course, as soon as they get anywhere near the 33,000 houses, or long before it, builders are going to take their foot off the pedal. So everything, it seems to me, has been designed to maintain that market price and not let it fall. And they don't seem to get the basics of development economics, which is that, you know, the supplies of housing is controlled by a very small number of people, really, who have an impact, and they can turn on the tap and off the tap as it suits them.
Yeah, I still am trying to figure it out, because even if you follow that logic, they know the demand is so high. You know, you're talking about 450,000 households, you know, young adults or adults living at home with their parents still. You know, even if they're building 33,000 houses a year, that's still not going to add sufficient supply to bring prices down.
Well, I think they believe it will, Rory, to be honest with you. I think that's where that, and you can see that in you know, when you look at the breakdown of the 33,000, so just over half of them are going to be private sector houses, which is fine. So we'll forget about those for a second. But only 3,600 were going to be affordable. So like, if they really believe that people who are in their 30s living at home with mommy and daddy and on a single wage, for example, or an ordinary, you know, wage, but on a single income, are going to be able to afford anything, they would have, like, that 3,600 number should be more like 13,600 every year, or maybe 20,000 every year. It should be far greater than it is. So I think you're right. There's a lot of rhetoric around affordability. They still haven't defined affordability. There's a lot of rhetoric around, you know, affordable housing, but yet the proof is, you know, is whatever the phrase is about proofs and puddings. But, like, you know, the numbers speak for themselves. 3,600 out of 33,000 is what they have down for affordable, to deliver affordable housing, whatever that means, which is minuscule given that that's probably the largest demand out there.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Hugh Brennan from the Ó Cualann Co-Housing Alliance, the only person who has delivered an affordable house in this country in the last decade. What's your take of the plan?
Okay, I'm going to be a little bit more optimistic. A little story. I was working out in Haiti in up to 2013, and I was working in construction there. And I came back and I expected a queue of employers at the airport waving to me, say, Hugh, come work for us. And they weren't there. Nobody got the message. And I arrived back at a complete loose end. And I ended up as what was known as a tour director with a touring company that brought over students from the States. And I had a very negative aspect on life. And I didn't like what I came back to see, what I saw in Ireland in terms of housing, in terms of lots of things. And I learned, believe it or not, to look at things through the eyes of the students. And one thing in particular, there's a library in Dunleary, and it's probably the most criticized building. And my friends said, it's a waste of money. It's a monstrosity. And I had these students out on the bay, and we were coming back in a boat, and they were looking at, wow, look at that building. Wow, it looks like a ship. Well, that's a fantastic building.
Yeah.
And we got back in and they said, look, wow, look at that space. Can you imagine when that's open and all of the students are milling around there? And I said to myself, I'm a fool to be looking at life so negatively. And I just started at that point and I said, I'm going to like that building and I'm going to promote it. And I'm going to do the same, if I possibly can, with elements of this plan. There's a lot of it that doesn't really impact on us at all. And because I do tend to focus more on the affordable side. Obviously, I have a broader view, but I do tend to focus more on the affordable side. And I am going to look at it from the point of view of the people who come to us looking for affordable housing. And they, they're a wide range, but if you take the middle group of them, they are couples with children who are paying ridiculous rents and who are looking to buy and to own their own house. Yeah. And I do think that this will help a proportion of those, okay? Now, and I'm looking in particular at the local authority affordable purchase scheme, where the local authority will take an equity share in the building. It's not my preferred method at all. Just like the clawback scheme, in order that the local authorities wouldn't lose their investment in a development, that wasn't my preferred method either, but we worked it. This one, if they stay in the house for a certain number of years, they won't be pursued, I'm told, for that equity share, even though it will begin to creep up after year five. So it will allow people to get on the ladder. I've said before that my preferred way to do this is that for a restriction, if you like, to be put on the folio or put on the deeds, so that when somebody buys off a co-op or off an approved housing body like ourselves, that when they sell, they must sell back, or at least we must get first refusal. And therefore, we can reintroduce it back as an affordable house. I mentioned just before we came on about the House of Arras that was sold a couple of weeks ago in Baldina Leacra, and it got a lot of coverage in the press. And the reason it got the coverage in the press was because we sold it for 165,000 and the person who bought it off us sold it for 325,000. Now, the local authority got back their 59,000 or thereabouts in their clawback, which more than covered them for their investment. And that's all that was ever guaranteed in that. That's all that was ever guaranteed, that it was going to be affordable for the first person. But once it was sold, it was back into the market. And it's not our preferred way to go. And neither is this shared equity our preferred way to go. But what I can say is, we will work it, and we will see how it will work. And I was just saying to the guys as well a little bit earlier, we're working on a scheme out in Dunemer at the moment. I think this will probably be the first one where the local authority will take an equity share in the houses. We don't know exactly how much yet. We'll be told that fairly shortly. But I know for a fact, in 2 or 3 years' time, or 3 or 4 years' time, one of those houses will be sold, and that share will be paid back to the local authority, and that couple or whoever are in there will make a gain on that sale as well, because of the way the property is going and will continue to go, I believe, for the next 3 or 4 years. And the gas thing is that it's in the minister's constituency, and somebody will say to him, you know, how did you allow this to happen? It happened before, it's happening again. But even bearing all that in mind, I am saying that there are elements of this that I think we can make work and that will be of benefit to people who badly need affordable housing. That's my starting point.
And it's interesting, Hugh, and I take what you're saying, and I absolutely, like, you know, it's not I don't like dealing in misery. You know, I like to try and be hopeful and optimistic, and indeed that's why I keep pushing for what's possible. And I don't buy the line that perfection is the enemy of the good. We should always be aiming for the highest possible standards, not accepting things. And so I'll push you a little bit. And I'll ask you a question firstly. How much would it cost to build a three-bed home or a apartment on public land?
To the actual build cost. The actual build cost at the moment are around 200,000 net of that. The cheapest that we can sell for, and we're finding it very difficult to sell at this at the moment, is 250 for, and that's the price of an average three bedroom house in Dunemer, including that. So the actual build cost net of that around 200,000 for a three bedroom house, and then for a two bedroom apartment, depending on how high you are going. It's not too far away from that either. It might be just a little bit more, maybe 210 or thereabouts.
Okay. And the ESRI said we can borrow and should be borrowing 4 to 7 billion to invest. Surely we could be building 10,000 affordable homes selling for 200,000 if we wanted to.
Yes, you can. And like we've done figures on this, and the great thing about building affordable housing is that you actually get all of your investment back very quickly. And why does that happen? Well, at the moment, the maximum investment that we've ever seen in any affordable house is around 50,000. And as soon as the house is sold, you get your VAT back. And during the whole building process, there is all of the taxes that are paid, not only by the workers on the site, but by the architects and by the engineers and by ourselves. And that tax take goes straight back to the exchequer. And it wouldn't be there if that house wasn't built. So it can be taken and it can be separated out and it can be identified as a gain. And therefore, you get that back straight away. And so what I'm saying is, when you're building affordable housing, it's actually a net zero for the exchequer.
But the question, why didn't they do that? I agree with you. There's some positivity in it. But why didn't they just go, let's build 10,000 affordable homes a year on the land we have?
Yeah, I honestly don't know. And we actually put in a submission to the department, and we gave them the breakdown of the figures. So I honestly don't know. And, I lose more of my hair if I try to delve into that and to work out why. Look, we're being asked since we started this process, you know, why isn't it being replicated throughout the country? All I can tell you is that slowly but surely it is gaining traction. You know, we now have around 700 houses in our immediate pipeline, and they're approved houses. And like there's one scheme, Bernard, out in Killinarden, and we've been talking to your friend Mick Nevin out there about that, because there's going to be 620 new houses out in Killinarden. Like, it's a massive scheme, and we're looking at the impact that that will have on other communities. And there is a traveller community there who will be most impacted, and we're talking to them to see how we can try to lessen the impact and actually maybe redevelop their little scheme. But I'm sorry, I've lost my train.
No, Rory. That's good. That brings me not very nicely on to thank you, Hugh, for that, to Bernard Joyce, director of the Irish Traveller Movement. Bernard, obviously we know, and listeners to Reboot would well know the conditions and the long standing crisis of accommodation for travellers. As a director, as an Irish traveller, what is your perspective on the plan? Did you get much hope out of it?
Yeah, well, just to say, this is my second time on your show, so thanks very much for the opportunity.
Great to have you
and,
back.
Yeah, and just say that, just in terms of, like many people, we obviously, you know, wanted to see a very clear plan in place. And when it's called, you know, housing for all, you would expect that it is going to be just that, in terms of meeting the needs of the housing needs in an Irish context. So, Rory, I probably would have seen a lot in terms of the in terms of housing right across the board, but it's, you know, specifically in terms of, if you look at the wider community and you look at travellers, that there's a real need to recognise the diversity in terms of what a home should look like. And I would be really concerned, when I'm looking at the housing for all, like, you would be concerned about the level of homelessness, both in the wider community and then the disproportionate numbers within the traveller community. And does housing for all, will it actually meet that need in addressing the issues that are there and the complex issues that are underpinning that? Then the other side of that is that, just from a general viewpoint, it really doesn't address the exacerbated costs that are currently there. And I think that a lot of homes are just completely out of reach of people, the income and then the costs associated with purchasing a home. And I think everybody wants to have a home for life. So it's not a home for a number of years, but it's a home that you can call it yours. And then that kind of takes me to the, to Irish travellers. And as an Irish traveller who I'm in my 40s now, and would have experienced, all the issues that, from homelessness to being on the roadside to lack of facilities to evictions. And I think that kind of brings me in from a more, a personal perspective on this, because you do want to see the crisis that's currently there within the travel community addressed. And as it currently stands, looking at Housing for All, and we had, like many, NGOs, had put in our own submissions. And I don't want to kind of knock this on the head and say, look, there's nothing in it. But I do want to say, yes, it's it is positive in one way that you have Housing for All, you have, an investment they're trying to put in place, what do we see as the different steps in terms of affordable social housing. But when you break that down, you're looking at is, will it actually meet the demand? Will it meet the needs? Will it address, renters? In terms of, and that was a big issue for ourselves, was the insecure tenure for people. And then when you go further into Irish travellers, which there's 40,000 Irish travellers plus in Ireland, and then you're looking at the inhumane, just they're completely just inhumane conditions of no fault of the community, and you're saying will this what's in this? So as you mentioned earlier, you nearly have to go into right into the House of Thrall to come across where travellers are mentioned. Yeah. So within that, they make reference to the implementation of the expert report and prioritising that. So that's all. That was already named as a priority. And just for your listeners, the expert report was commissioned by the minister, and we had called for it through the National Travel Accommodation Consultative Committee, the local and national organisations. So within that, it has 32 recommendations which were signed off, and as currently there's a programme board, but it's very slow. It has been quite slow in terms of the implementation and meeting, and addressing what needs to be addressed. And unlike when people hear of billions being spent, saying, look, we're really investing heavily, and over the course of this House of Thrall, the issue for travellers hasn't been about expenditure, hasn't been about the budget, it has been about the local authorities providing safe, adequate, culturally appropriate provision of accommodation across the country. And there's been significant underspends from year upon year upon year. And on top of that, there's been reports by the Human Rights and Equality Commission. There's been reports by the Children's Ombudsman's Office, and just highlighting the significant, lack of mitigating the substandard conditions in which many travellers live in Ireland today. And not only that, but children having to live in those conditions. So that has always been a fundamental element around a human rights based. It's a human rights. I think it is a human rights issue in terms of just having a home and having a right to a home. And at the moment, I don't see that. That right is not. It's not there yet. And it doesn't. And on top of that, it's not in terms of the recommendations and the mention. They just mention it. And what we would be calling for was, it would be more helpful to have clear, tangible timelines of the 32 recommendations, so that they would be obviously reporting back. And the fact that they have set up a national centralised under the Taoiseach, and call it an all-government approach. You absolutely welcome that, because it is an all-government approach. It's not one department that's going to resolve this completely, but it has to be an all-government approach to do that. But I am just concerned that it lacks specifically around travellers, the timelines, and it doesn't, address in it some of the main concerns and issues that are faced in terms of travellers in Ireland. And while there are obviously other areas that we welcome in more general, I think that's really important to outline. So the positives has been the enhanced tenancy sustainment support for families in existing in homelessness, the reform in the differential of rents, the review and reform income eligibility for social housing. And I say that because in some cases, traveller families who are just across the threshold, and I think this may also apply to larger families within the wider community as well. What they find is that they just break the threshold, even though they would be on social welfare, unemployment assistance, or maybe on disability. But because you break that threshold, they then become ineligible. So it's good to see that being aligned and that people are not falling into, I would describe as a poverty trap. Yeah. And then examining, Rory, the regulation on social housing. So I think that's really important in doing that. So as I pointed out, the negative is the targets and delivery of travel accommodation. And just for people who's listening who mightn't be aware of this, Like, we're not seeing the ramping up. We're not seeing the delivery of traveller accommodation. And we're not seeing new units coming on stream. And I think there's a systematic failure. And the community obviously, you know, don't have confidence, and you don't believe that this is going to materialise. And at the same time, where travel provision of accommodation may be coming up, you know, we're still seeing rhetoric at a local level preventing traveler specific accommodation coming on stream, such as the kind of party planning process, you know, which is fundamentally needs to be, we had called for that to be obviously bypassed. And we're also seeing the for families who are continuing to move, and nomadism is a fundamental part of who we are as a people. That still is a criminal, you know, for travellers to be travelling. So we have been asking for the repeal of the criminal trespass legislation to facilitate the nomadic way of life. And because it's different, and because we have a different culture, it doesn't necessarily mean it's wrong. And there's no reason why both communities cannot live side by side. And I think it should be supported. But I also think that, you know, in doing that in a structured way, in consultation and dialogue with the community, can be very, 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 very beneficial overall. And we had called for, because I think the system is broken. So when you look at it out there and you're kind of saying, well, this is the plan, and, you know, from the last plan, and like, and by the way, I'm not an academic, but I do say you don't need to be, you know, understand absolutely everything, but you can see the serious, inhumane conditions that people should just not be living in. And people, you know, somehow that becomes normalized. And when it becomes normalized, it becomes accepted, and it doesn't change. And in this case, the conditions that I grew up on during the 80s, you know, and I just said this before, that on Darndale Road, have literally not changed to such a level that it would eradicate those conditions. So no person in Ireland should be without water, electricity, and sanitation. And unfortunately, that's not the case within the travel community, and it's just not acceptable. And does this plan prioritize that? Does it address that as a whole? No, it doesn't. And even for this year, the drawdown, and we're in the last quarter of 2021, and there's a significant, the budget itself, only, I would say something like a quarter of the budget is only being drawn down. So, you know, so there's we don't see accommodation coming on stream. So there's obviously other areas, and I think that what was important was, and it was a massive, this was a really, you know, you'd be surprised by my next comment, but during the global pandemic in which we're still in, COVID-19, many people were, you know, as part of the guidelines, people were asked to, you know, to social distance, to wear masks, to wash their hands, and to do that with warm water. And a lot of travelers couldn't. They couldn't comply with that. They were living in what could only be described as overcrowded conditions and sharing facilities. And they were more exposed in terms of COVID-19 and the spread of that. And unfortunately, the travel community was completely disproportionately impacted. And we had said this from the outset. And it's you know, while people have contacted, it's just probably just a miracle in some ways that people, that many travelers have not died from COVID-19. And you know, that's being honest. But the other side then is that the facilities that were put in, which are humanitarian facilities, what is probably positive is that they're going to hold on to those facilities. That's my understanding from the housing fraud. But again, I think it just doesn't go far. It doesn't go far enough, and it's not strong enough, and there is not a level of accountability.
Yeah. Well, listen, Bernard Joyce from the Irish Traveller Movement, thank you so much for joining me again on Reboot Republic. It was great to have you back, and we will continue to have traveller voices and highlight the issues and on Reboot Republic. So it's great to have you here. Lorcan, maybe last word to you. How do you see this panning out in terms of the housing crisis in the coming years?
I think actually it ties in with what Bernard was just talking about there. I think they have taken this very much as a plan for housing supply and haven't really been looking at housing in the round. Housing is a much more complicated topic than just building houses. In fact, the kind of construction of houses should be at the end of a long process, not a long process, but of a process of looking at all sorts of things, including planning, transportation, health, gender, equality, minorities, all that kind of stuff. And when you look at all that, the house that comes out at the end should be suitable and tick all those boxes, including, for example, climate change, you know, and housing for refugees and all those kind of things. And, you know, and Bernard falls into that as well, like the housing for travellers, all that kind of stuff. We don't do that. This is a plan for housing supply. And, you know, there is no real meaningful discussion of climate change, of travellers, of equality, of gender, I keep mentioning, because it's a really interesting aspect of housing that nobody talks about. Yeah. And I'd say no housing minister has a clue about how gender relates to housing, but it does, because the built environment is typically designed and delivered by men to suit men's needs, and they don't consider what happens to women. Anyway, all that kind of stuff. So the house should be the end product of all the discussions and policy documents around that, and not the beginning. And I think what they've done here is put very much the cart before the horse. So deliver the house, and everything else kind of can maybe happen afterwards. It doesn't work like that. I mean, that's why we have, you know, during the boom, we had all the right type of houses in the wrong locations, and now we're going to build all the wrong type of housing in the right location. So we'll have all the Mac housing in the inner city where we need housing, and previously with all the lovely family homes all over the countryside where they weren't needed, in Tulsk and Cavan and all those kind of places around the country and all the ghost estates. So we're kind of putting the cart before the horse and thinking it's all about supply. And that is an outcome of what you get when you listen to really simplistic spreadsheet analysis from economists. That's my take on it. That if you're building enough houses, everything will be grand. And like, housing is much more complicated than that. That's why you have people like Hugh and Bernard and myself and all of the different people you've had on today here to give the diverse perspectives of that. And, you know, the right to housing, for example. So law is very much a part of housing. It's not just about building houses. So building houses is the end product of a whole lot of discussions that should be had. We don't have them in Ireland. So we end up with the wrong type of housing in the wrong location at the wrong price. A handful of people win and the majority of people don't win. And that's what you get when you focus on the output and not on all the things that should go before deciding on what the output should be.
Great, Lorcan. Thanks so much, as always, for having you on. Hugh Brennan, last word to you. I know you're optimistic, but if Ó Cualann and that affordable housing model was to be expanded really rapidly, would we have the capacity, and how would we get the capacity to deliver?
Well, a lot of it is what Lorcan spoke about before. Yes, but I do believe that the capacity is there in the industry, but a lot of it will be focused on the built to rent and the co-living, you know, before they were banned, but there are still some of those going through the whole system. I do think that we'll pick up the slack, if you like, from the office building sector. I mean, I know that's still going ahead slowly, but it won't be anything like it was. I will come back to one thing that Lorcan said about the absorption rate. Isn't that what you called us, Lorcan? I think I learned about that in a very good book by a guy called Lorcan. I always want to distinguish between builders and developers when we're talking about that absorption rate. And there are some very, very good builders out there who will continue to build, but will not take the risk to sell. And they're the people that we want to work with. And they will continue to work with us, building at cost, purely because they want to build. They're not in the market to sell. And I'm happy to say that there are more and more of those there. And there are a lot of smaller to medium-sized builders who never got back to work after the crash, and they can get back to work now. If we allow them back in, we can work on local authority schemes. I mean, the big one that we spoke about before was Oscar Traynor. Like, that could be divided up amongst 8 or 9 different small builders who could build just affordable and social housing there, and there would be a huge demand for it. And this is a way to get them back in. You don't have to depend always on the apprenticeships. We need apprenticeships, absolutely. But if you can attract the smaller builders in there, you'll be amazed, you know, the people who will come out of the woodwork, who are maybe moved to work in other sectors, who are even working abroad and who will actually come back to work at home once the opportunities are there, you know. So I honestly do believe, Rory, that we do have the capacity if it's managed properly.
Yeah, great. Hugh Brennan, Larkin, Sir, Bernard Joyce, thank you so much for joining me today on Reboot Republic. And an appeal again to our listeners, this has been an incredible day of analysis of Housing for All. Tony's put in a hell of a day producing it. And really, we put out the appeal to you, become a patron. Go over to patreon.com, patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Sign up for whatever you can each month. Become a patron, become a supporter. Help us keep this show on the road. Thank you very much, everyone, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Rob.